We all have our golden hour, our time to de-stress and reflect. To reach new levels of calm and contentment, check out Plus CBD's Reserve Collection. It's crafted using the highest quality full-spectrum hemp oil for bigger, broader effects to help you experience deeper relaxation and a brighter mood. As you know, I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system, which regulates many of our most critical bodily functions, such as learning and memory, emotional processing, sleep, temperature and pain control, and inflammatory and immune responses. CBD is a real breakthrough in herbal products. The CBD brand that I take is Plus CBD from CV Sciences. Their Reserve Collection is a specially curated blend of cannabinoids, rich and bold, or when intense support is needed. Enjoy a deeper CBD experience with Plus CBD's Reserve Collection of oils and gummies. To learn more or to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for Plus CBD's Reserve Collection. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's a pleasure to talk about something that I'm really excited about. Sometimes we interview sponsors on this program. Full disclosure, Timeline, the makers of MitoCure, is a sponsor, but they're a sponsor not because they came to me. I came to them. I was excited about the MitoCure product. I thought that the science was plausible. And I said, I want to get the word out to our listeners. So today we're going to talk to Jen Scheinman, who's a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and senior manager of nutrition affairs at Timeline Nutrition. It's a longevity company on a mission to improve health span. And what's exciting about this product is that we often talk about the mitochondria and the role that they play in energy production, but also in all manner of bodily functions, because the mitochondria drive energy production in all the cells, not just the muscles, but also in the brain, the heart, and even in the immune system. They are ubiquitous, hence the name for coenzyme Q10 scientifically is ubiquinol or ubiquinone. And so it is ubiquitous, but there are a series of nutrients that can influence the mitochondria. And it's not mutually exclusive. Not shall I take this or shall I take that? I think we need an all of the above approach. And I think that the MitoCure product satisfies that need. So without further ado, here's Jen Scheinman. Welcome, Jen. It's a pleasure having you on the program.
Thanks so much. I'm so happy to be here. And, you know, I feel so fortunate that I get to talk about a nutrient that most people have never heard of or just starting to hear about. And to your point, the science that has been done around urolithin A has, you know, experts like yourself reaching out to learn more as opposed to us having to kind of go out there. And I think, you know, hopefully we'll be able to chat through some of the science and get people to understand why people are getting so excited about urolithin A. That's the molecule we'll be talking about, and all the great research that's been done and that's coming.
Exactly. And, you know, so first of all, you know, we have to explain how I got interested in this. And the way I got interested in this is, well, you know, first of all, you hear about it, there's a bit of a buzz, and then you go, well, yeah, you know, there's a million things out there. Okay, it's on my radar screen. Then I see research in a prestigious high impact journal, Nature, which is about as good as it gets in the scientific literature, suggesting that consuming urolithin A can be beneficial for older individuals, specifically increasing their walking distance. That is really where the rubber meets the road. Okay, research is good. Then I say, okay, let's try it. I tried it on myself. I've been recommending it to patients. And, you know, sometimes the research is very, very impressive, but, you know, the results are a little meh. But I'm actually very excited about the support that it's given me in maintaining my athleticism, my overall energy, mental focus, as I enter my, hate to say it, eighth decade. Here I am. But it's important to me to maintain not just muscle strength and endurance, but especially brain power going forward. So that's my story. Also, I'm very excited to hear that a lot of important people in the field, people that I respect, Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, Dr. Mark Hyman, and also, you know, other experts in the field who I trust and who I think have really good medical bona fides, believe that urolithin A is beneficial. So first of all, so give us an introduction to this and tell us a little bit how you got involved.
Yeah, well, I got involved, you know, I was doing sort of as an extension on my private practice. I was working, I did have a private nutrition practice, and I was sort of expanding out that of patient care. And I was doing a lot of, you know, content writing and just sort of helping brands develop their message for consumers and healthcare practitioners alike. And so I got connected with the folks at Timeline, and sort of similar to you, I started reading these articles that are published in, you know, as you said, Nature Metabolism, Cell, JAMA Network, these top tier medical journals. You know, and at that point, I was like a 20, 25 year resident, you know, dietitian. I had never seen studies like this caliber on a nutrition supplement and done by a brand. And so I was just really blown away by it. And, you know, the more that I've been researching, I think that mitochondrial health is sort of just on the cusp of an explosion in terms of where things are going for longevity and health, right? If you think about like where we were 10 years ago with gut health and probiotics, it was just sort of starting to trend and people were getting interested in it. And it was almost this like mind-blowing concept of, wow, there's bacteria in my gut and it can help my entire body, right? And now we're kind of learning, same thing with the mitochondria, right? Besides just energy metabolism that you talked about, they do a number of other things like communicate with each other's cells. They communicate with each other. They regulate cell death, calcium homeostasis. So there's so much that they do. And there's, to your point, also so many different nutrients, dietary interventions, exercises that can really help to promote the health of the mitochondria. And, you know, I think the idea is hopefully slow down and maybe one day we'll find things that even reverse some of these hallmarks of aging.
Right. I mean, there actually is something that's formally titled the mitochondrial theory of aging.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of like, you know, as, you know, like a machine that runs down. These energy powerhouses, you know, like old batteries, kind of get weak in the body. And the problem is, you know, you can always recharge batteries, or you can, well, you know, I guess maybe that by that analogy, you can recharge the mitochondria, perhaps with outside substances like urolithin A. But once your mitochondria really wear out, you can only recharge a rechargeable battery a certain number of times. I've noticed this with appliances. You got to throw out the old batteries. Anything that helps to delay that process can have a pervasive effect on all the hallmarks of aging. So just, you know, plenty of time today. You know, we did a short form interview on my weekly radio program on the weekends, but we have more time today. So can you explain basically what are the mitochondria and what could possibly go wrong to impair their functioning?
Well, I love the analogy that you just gave almost of this battery pack, right? And I use a similar analogy, almost like a factory, an energy factory. And so if you think in the most simplistic terms, right, it's a factory that takes raw materials, which in the mitochondria case is the food that we eat and the air that we breathe. And it goes down a very complex assembly line. And almost you can picture different ingredients go on there and different coworkers, right? These are, like you mentioned, CoQ10 that helps to shuttle some of the, you know, protons that happen and sort of the energy metabolism. And then you get the final output, which is called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And that's sort of your cellular currency, your energy. And then, as I mentioned earlier, there are some other things that the mitochondria do, but I think in the terms of the hallmarks of aging and just sort of for the conversation today, really picturing this factory. And you really also nailed it when you were saying that just like any factory, right? Like you can recharge it, you can kind of plug it in and kind of, you know, add more workers onto that factory, add better quality materials into that factory. But at the end of the day, once that factory is kaput,
yep,
you need to remove it. And when I think about mitochondrial health and things that target different areas of mitochondrial health, I almost put it in different buckets. So you can build new mitochondria. We call that biogenesis. You can optimize and protect the mitochondria like CoQ10. And then where urolithin A comes in is once that factory is kaput, you can break it down, recycle it, take the working parts, and build new ones. And that's called mitophagy. And that's really the sweet spot of where urolithin A comes in. It helps to optimize that cellular recycling of the mitochondria.
So I guess to extend the analogy, it would be as if the body is propelled by 50 million or 100 million engines, you know, perhaps even more, you know, millions and millions of engines. But as you age, a certain percentage of them become inefficient, and they may actually act as kind of a ball and chain on energy metabolism because they're just sputtering, they're not working properly. And so we think of urolithin A as not so much as a substance that powers up the mitochondria, but that it works on something called mitophagy. So mito for mitochondria, phage, which comes from the Greek word, I think it is, for eat. So there's autophagy, which is the cleanup crew for the senescent cells within the body. But specifically, urolithin A seems to work as a mitochondrial cleanup crew, or a little bit of a Pac-Man to grab onto these inefficient mitochondria and gobble them up and dispose of them. Is that oversimplifying?
That's perfect. And we talk about how, and I think the two ways we sort of think about it is the Pac-Man or just sort of your garbage disposal, right? Cleaning out these dysfunctional mitochondria, because they're not just sitting there inert. Like you mentioned, a senescent cell, right? These mitochondria are sending off inflammatory markers and can be damaging other mitochondria or other cell components. So we want to remove them. And our body does have a way of removing them. This mitophagy process does happen naturally, but that also declines as we get older. And in fact, that was just added as a new hallmark of aging about, I think, within 2023. They defined these 9 hallmarks of aging. And then 10 years later, they went in and updated these hallmarks. There's now 12, and mitophagy now is one of those. So you now have these factories that are worn out and damaging, and your cleanup crew is also worn out and not working as well. So as we think about longevity and optimizing our health, we want to think about, you know, how do we support both mitochondrial function and mitophagy?
And so what precisely is urolithin A? And do you know any of the background on how they stumbled upon it? Was it just serendipitous that they discovered that this compound could influence the mitochondria?
Yeah, so I love this story. So the founders of Timeline, we actually started with a parent company called Amazentis, and it was just a science company.
Isn't it a Swiss company?
It is, yeah. Okay. It's founded out of the EPFL, which is the Swiss Institute of Technology. And this research team, it was sort of a team of doctors and scientists that really wanted to approach dietary supplementation and food products in a way that like hasn't been done before, like really putting a biotech, almost like pharmaceutical level of research to items before we even came to market. And so this was about probably 15 years ago. And, you know, pomegranates were kind of having a moment in terms of like a superfood with all these polyphenols and active ingredients in there. So,
but they have a bunch of ingredients, they have sort of a whole spectrum of ingredients. So maybe they wanted to find what's the secret sauce there that is of value.
That was exactly what happened. So they actually traveled around the world and were going to like, you know, Brazil and the Middle East and Spain and all these places that have, you know, pomegranates there. And they were really dissecting the pomegranate and looking at all these polyphenols. And I think where they really, you know, got excited about urolithin A was it was a worm study. And, you know, a lot of longevity research starts in worms because they only live 30 days. So it's really easy to look at the impact of things. And so they fed this one group of worms elegitanins, which are one of the potent polyphenols that are in pomegranates. And then they fed them urolithin A, which is, I'll get to that in a second, but it's a postbiotic nutrient. And we'll go over what that means. But so they fed one group the elegitanins, they fed the other group the urolithin A, and the urolithin A group of worms lived 45% longer, and they were more active. And when you look at other longevity-boosting molecules like, you know, rapamycin, metformin, NAD precursors, resveratrol, we're seeing like 15 to 20% life extension in worms. So to see 45% was like mind-blowing. The only thing that really seems to extend life in worms longer is calorie restriction, and that's at like 47%. So this got people.
But that's no fun at all,
right? Yeah, exactly. So
it's hard to sell that premise.
It's very hard to sell calorie restriction for sure. So that's really what put it on the map in terms of the researchers was like, what is this molecule, and let's learn more about it and what it can do outside of worms. So I want to just kind of go back to what a postbiotic is, because I think that's important for people to kind of understand when we also talk about, can you get this from food? Can you supplement? And so a postbiotic is a molecule that our gut microbiome makes. So I like to say in very simple terms, it's almost like we give our gut microbiome free room and board. These bacteria get to live inside our gut. They get protection there. They get to eat the things we don't eat. So like fibers and these polyphenols. And then they pay us in these postbiotic molecules that actually confer health benefits onto us. So people have heard of like vitamin K, if that's a postbiotic. Short-chain fatty acids have been getting a lot of attention. Those are other postbiotics.
Butyrate, so on.
Butyrate, yeah. Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. So urolithin A is a postbiotic. So we have to rely on having a healthy gut microbiome to be getting it naturally.
And so have they done studies on humans? Because I think that they have differentiated between people who have the right microbiome to biotransform, I guess it's the precursor, the
oligotannins, yep,
into the urolithin A through the bacterial action. But some people can't do it and some people can do it. And maybe it has to do with a Western microbiome that's damaged by antibiotics and some, you know, poor quality diets and so on.
Yep, absolutely. So we have looked at that. We've looked at populations across the globe, really. It turns out really like only 30 to 40% of people even have the right gut microbiome to make it. And the truth is we aren't sure exactly what microbiome, like what molecule, or sorry, what bacteria species makes it. We know that people who have a really rich, diverse microbiome and a healthy gut tend to be producers. We know acromantia tends to be present, but I don't think we've really shown whether acromantia is actually the species that, or the
secret sauce for making it.
And the other thing is, to your point, like Western lifestyle. Like I know myself personally, I was a C-section baby and I was bottle fed. And no matter what I do to keep my gut healthy, I think there's certain strains that just never, I never got inoculated with and just never will, no matter what probiotics I take.
It's hard to go back in the time machine and get that good priming that may be required for that. But then there's so many influences in our Western cultures that may militate against a good, healthy, diverse microbiome.
Absolutely. And even as we age, the gut microbiome changes. That's another of those hallmarks of aging, is the microbiome starts to change with age. And so, you know, the question is, even if you started with it, do you still have that same species in there, that same strain as you get older? So it's very, as a dietitian, I really believe in food first approach, and the supplement is meant to supplement gaps in the diet, or, you know, add things that are just really challenging to get in the diet. And that's really why I feel urolithin A is one of those rare things that to rely on diet is just, it's challenging because you don't know if you make it. And chances are most people are not eating enough of the dietary precursors to make a difference. And that's actually another study that we did, was we looked at the dosing that you get. So 500 milligrams, and we'll get into the science, but 500 milligrams is the minimal dose to start to see an effect. And in order to get 500 milligrams through diet, you would have to drink 6 cups of pomegranate juice a day.
Okay.
And that's just an obscene amount of sugar.
Right. Even the unsugared forms of it deliver the natural sugar. So it's very hard to, I mean, I like pomegranate juice, but I get the concentrate sometimes, but I find it sweet. I cut it with, you know, some seltzer or, you know, some water, a lot of ice, and it flavors the water, but I am nowhere getting any significant amounts of the urolithin A or the precursor that will make the urolithin A. Okay, so they figured out a way to manufacture urolithin A, you know, probably in a big vat through some, you know, patented process, and they make it.
Exactly. They make it, and then they tested it, as I mentioned, kind of started in worms and have moved all the way through mice. And now there's several clinical human trials looking at its safety and its efficacy and its, you know, its benefits, which have now been published in a number of great journals. And I think Timeline really put urolithin A on the map, and where the research is going, because it all comes back to this like wonderful, you know, ability to improve mitophagy and mitochondrial function. There's so many areas of aging that can be impacted by mitochondrial decline. You mentioned in the beginning, brain, joints, skin. Most of our studies have really focused on muscle and skin, but we're extending into immune. And I think there's just, you know, so many great research institutions outside of the work that we're doing, like the NIH and the Buck Institute of Aging, that are now really starting to look at this molecule in other areas of aging.
And I was very pleased to hear a podcast with Dr. Gabriel Lyon, who's an expert on muscles, and she emphasizes resistance exercise and protein as a hedge against aging. And then when asked, I believe this was the Andrew Huberman podcast, she was asked, you know, are there ancillary supplements that can be beneficial? And she named specifically urolithin A, that she's big on. And I really respect her, because I think she, you know, she's really studied muscle physiology, and she studied aging. And, you know, you had me at hello with this, but now more evidence is coming to corroborate.
And I think that came really from our focus. You know, our first clinical trials were really done in the muscle space. And the reason for that is, you know, a couple of reasons, right? Number one is the muscle, it makes sense. They're so densely populated with mitochondria, right? The energy, obviously the exercise, but just the energy to get up and walk around and do your daily activities requires energy from thousands of mitochondria. So your mitochondria in your muscle cells, there's thousands of them. It's not just one or two. Mm-hmm. And then the other reason is because as a company focus, we really want to impact the things that are causing the most dysfunction as we get older. And I think, you know, that speaks to what Dr. Lyon is really talking about, and sort of the muscle being the organ of longevity. As we get older, muscle decline starts to happen in our 30s, and then it accelerates as we get older in our 60s. And you know, sarcopenia, this muscle wasting that happens as we get older, and just even the, you know, ability you fall and you can't get up, or, you know, you're retired and you want to be able to travel, right? These are the things that we can really impact and help people with. And that's really why our research
but
started.
But it's not even just physical capacity. It's also that the muscles are an organ, as Gabriel Lyons emphasizes, and that they produce myokines, which have a multiplicity of functions for the brain. Endocrine functions, that muscles are an endocrine organ. And so you really want to keep that organ tuned up, because it will have many beneficial ramifications throughout your body, and not just a matter of, you know, how much can you bench press, or, you know, how far can you cycle. If that's all good, we want to remain active. We don't want to, you know, become incapacitated, but it's more than just something for jocks. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. It's good. Okay. Way beyond something for jocks. It's, if you want to be able to get out of bed, it's for you too, right?
Indeed. So. With alacrity, enthusiasm, and coherence of thought too, because, you know, the mitochondria certainly play a role in the brain. So I wanted to ask a little bit about dose, because one of the things that has given resveratrol a little bit of a black eye is that it was thought to be a very promising anti-aging nutrient. And then they did the studies, and then they concluded that you'd have to consume 1,000 times more than what is practical, feasible, and affordable to get a resveratrol effect. That remains controversial, because I think there's some people who maintain there's some benefits to modest doses of resveratrol. We can't throw that out entirely. But what's the story with urolithin A? Can we get doses that match the results in some of the research with commercially available preparations, or do you have to take, you know, $2,500 worth of supplements every month to achieve that?
Yeah. Well, not with urolithin A. Our studies, what we found was the lowest beneficial dose is 500 milligrams, and then 1,000 milligrams, there seems to be some additive benefit from that. We think to sort of plateau at 1,000 milligrams. So while there's no like upper safety or toxicity if you take more, there's just no benefit to take more than 1,000 milligrams. And the way that it is sold right now commercially through Timeline and our MitoPure supplement is either two soft gels. So each soft gel is 250 milligrams. So two soft gels is considered a dose of 500 milligrams. If you wanted to go up to 1,000, then that would be four. But we also have a food-based approach. And the reason for that is we just wanted people to find a way that they're most likely to be consistent with taking their supplements. So it's a powder. It's a really nice, clean formulation. There's no added sugar or like an artificial sweetener. It's just a plain berry flavor. And you mix that into like a smoothie or yogurt or, you know, you can even put it into like an oatmeal or something like that. It's heat stable.
Yep.
That's what
I do. When I travel, I'll, you know, have some little oatmeal for breakfast, mix it in. But at home, when I have a blender, I'll blenderize it with my protein powder and my creatine and, you know, some other ingredients.
Yep. That's exactly how I do it as well. When I'm traveling, I take the soft gels, and when I'm home, I throw it in a smoothie, or I throw it. It's actually delicious in yogurt. Like I eat plain Greek yogurt.
What is the little sachet, the little packet deliver? Is it 500 or 1,000?
500.
500.
So it's either two soft gels or one sachet would be 500. And then you could mix and match those. So if you wanted to take 1,000, you could take, you know, two soft gels and one powder. You can kind of do whatever. The efficacy and the dosing is exactly the same. It's just, like I said, that's really the only difference is how you prefer to take it. Price is the same. So it's just
I personally take 500, but, you know, maybe I'll explore the upper reaches of that, you know, where you think there's diminishing terms, returns after 1,000, but between 500 and 1,000, there may be some incremental gains.
Yeah. So I just upped mine. I was taking 500. And so, you know, because I get that question a lot is like, how much should I take? And so when I first started, I was taking 500. I'm now 48, almost 49, and, you know, in good health and do all the things that I think are going to help me. And I had my parents who are in their mid to late 70s. I had them on 1,000 milligrams. But as I'm sort of starting to go through perimenopause and I'm learning all the changes that happen in muscle and happen in brain, and I'm starting to kind of feel a lot of that, I actually just upped my dose to 1,000 milligrams. And so
I might explore that. Go there.
Mm-hmm. Waiting. It's been pretty recent, so I don't have any like personal feedback to share on whether I've noticed it helping with any of my brain fog or anything like fatigue. But we've noticed, you know, on our studies, like I said, you sometimes get a faster, more robust impact with 1,000 milligrams. Mm-hmm. One of the areas we just started to look into is immune health and immune aging. And that was a really interesting study where we did 1,000 milligrams, and we saw these robust changes in immune phenotyping after just 1 month of 1,000 milligrams.
Yeah, I want to talk about, you know, some other aspects of this, because you would talk about, you know, muscle and strength and, you know, performance. But there were some other ramifications, some other studies that are intriguing about this. But also, and this is quite interesting, is that you can apply this stuff topically to the skin, because guess what? The skin is susceptible to mitochondrial decline and mitochondrial aging. And there's some pretty good clinicals suggestive of a benefit to the skin. And I will tell you anecdotally, some of my patients, some of my family members, and yours truly, we've tried it and we think there's really something to it. So we'll talk about that in part two. Our guest is Jen Scheinman. She's a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and she's senior manager of nutrition affairs at Timeline Nutrition. They're the makers of MitoPure, which is a unique urolithin A product. You can find them at timeline.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.